Bernard, B-E-R-N-A-R-D. Karen, 4343 Post Road. I don't know if you need that. I live across the street. But I did receive a letter, and so that's why I'm here, because I just feel that seven condos is just too many for that spot. So I don't know what kind of testing was done. Was there traffic studies done? It just seems like with the space that they're putting them in, we're going to end up with a lot of traffic and some issues in that area. We have accidents there at least once a month already. So adding seven units and very little parking and that congestion just might just be a little too many. That's all. That's my only. So I don't know how that's being issued, how's that's been being looked at.
Yeah, so normally if the petitioner was here, we would ask those exact questions, or rather, you would turn and ask them and they would respond. So if you have any other questions, feel free to state them now. That way we can make sure they are addressed when the petitioner is here at the next meeting.
Okay, no, that's really my questions, because, you know, I got the letter and I'm here because I want to know really what's going on, what kind of studies were taken for that type of situation. Drainage over there is very poor. We get floods every time it rains. You know, adding seven more units, and how's that all going to be addressed? When there's waterfront events, people are parking all on the streets already, so where are you going to put the extra people? There's a historic house on that land now. Is that going to be demolished? Has the Historic Society been looked at that? I mean, there's just a lot of concerns over there. And I know there are a lot of condos and a lot of apartments on the other side of Post Road, but across the street, we're all single family residents, so.
I'll see if there's
going on. That's all.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
Good evening, Michelle Comar, Ward 1. I am not a noticed abutter within the 200-foot radius, but I can tell you, Councilman Gephardt, you're a lucky man to have Post Road in the shape it's in. And my comment is not to turn Post Road into a traffic-impacted, congested area like Centerville Road with zone changes. My husband and I will purposely take Post Road going down to East Greenwich or South County versus the highway, which is faster, just for the scenic view. It's low traffic. It's nice the way it is. The house that's going to be demolished was constructed in 1850. It's part of my scenic view going down Post Road. My husband and I got married just up the road from this site at Clouds Hill Museum. So it's a favorite spot. I mean, the developer has the right to develop his land, and if the building is not on the historic register or a contributing property in a historic district, they can do what they want. But it is on the Warwick Comprehensive Plan future land use map. It's designated for commercial use. And commercial use to us is office, maybe businesses. So it doesn't have a designation in the future for our existing plan for residential use. And I believe the proposal is for going from one structure, that 1850 house, which supports a commercial business and one housing unit. I could ask the applicant when they're here, and convert it to seven residential units and some office use. I'm not sure. It's not clear in the application. There is a discrepancy in how big the parcel is. In the application on the survey plan, I think it's 0.85 acres. On the Warwick's tax assessor's database, it's 0.95 acres. I don't know if that's significant enough to evaluate if this density, this increased density use of land, is compatible with the surrounding area. The map in the council's package that was emailed to people on the distribution list, within the 200-foot radius, it looks like it's single-family homes. The density is low. This would be a high-density, more intense use of one lot. So that's my comment for now. Maybe the developer will find this helpful when they do come before the council. Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for having the meeting tonight. My name is Sally Gruber, G-R-U-B-E-R, and I do not live by this property, but I traveled to see the property so that I could experience it. And it's a very, very lovely property. It's beautifully landscaped, and there's a very lovely, solid-looking, historic home on it. So the idea of changing this property, Rhode Island is such a great state because of its people, ocean, woodlands, and history. And I feel we should try to support those four aspects. And that property, I don't have as much knowledge as the residents that live very close, but it's a beautiful property, and we need more of these properties in our state, in our city. So I'm very, very skeptical about building all of these structures on that very small piece of property. Thank you very much for listening to my concerns.
Is there any other members of the public who wish to speak about this? Is there any other members of the public that wish to speak about this? Is there any other members of the public who wish to speak about this? All right, so given that the petitioner can't be here tonight, we can entertain a motion to continue this.
Second.
I heard somebody make it. All right, seconded by Councilman Ricks. Who made the initial? Councilman Gebhardt made it?
Yeah.
All right. Clerk, please call the roll on the request to continue the matter to May 11th. Yes.
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 All right, next is PCO 10-26, an ordinance amending Appendix A, Zoning Ordinance of the City of Warwick regarding voting thresholds for the changes to historic district zones of City of Warwick. Petitioner, this is citywide. Public properties.
Committee recommends, committee recommends public hearing.
Councilman Ricks, would you please make the motion?
Move to open public hearing.
Seconded by Councilman Foley. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, seeing none, public hearing stands open. So, Director Kravitz.
The amendment relates to the HDC and how they operate. You'll see in the ordinance that there's this provision that says they need to have, I think it's four affirming votes, whether they're approving or denying something. So Attorney Tights has suggested to staff, he actually made this recommendation, to simply delete and strike that provision. It's not consistent with other state statutes that will rely on a simple majority to pass or deny items.
So is it fair to say this would change it from the four members who all have to agree to instead be simple majority?
Right.
All right. Any questions for Director Kravitz? Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. So with this one amendment, that is the only amendment that I actually am seeing here is the strike through of that, two sentences. There wouldn't need to be any further changes to ensure that the ordinance is read such that it is a matter of a simple majority vote?
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that I was 100% clear on that and that there weren't any other amendments that would be necessary. On the merits, I'm fine with this. No objection.
All right. Does any... any members of the public wish to speak on this? Do any members of the public wish to speak on this? Do any members of the public wish to speak on this? All right, seeing none, we can entertain a motion to close the public hearing. Councilman Lattison.
Close the public hearing.
Seconded by Councilman Muto. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, is there any further discussion on this matter? All right, seeing none, we can entertain a motion.
Move
favor.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Lattiser, seconded by Councilman Ricks for favorable action. Any further discussion? All right. Seeing none, clerk will please call the roll on favorable action. Yes.
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 All right, so... all right, so we're going to, as long as no objection, jump back to public comment because those who were able to stay have been waiting quite a while. Is there any objection to that? All right, so public comment rule 41, after general communications and prior to the consent calendar at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council each month, there shall be a period of time not to exceed 30 minutes during which citizens may comment about Warwick City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall not exceed 30 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. Each citizen signed up and present shall have not to exceed 5 minutes to speak, provided, however, that if more than six citizens are signed up and present, 30 minutes will be split evenly among speakers. Time shall not be transferable among speakers. The topics for comment shall be issues directly affecting city government. City Council members will not respond to questions during the public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of the earlier of all speakers, concluding their allotted time or 30 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires unanimous vote. So, by the way, bless you, whoever that was. First up is Rob Cody.
Good evening. Rob had to go, so he can't make it.
All right. Thank you for letting us know.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is Richard Langseth. I think he left, but we're still going to try. All right. And last up is Darlene Necco.
Hello, Darlene Netco, Ward 7. I had wanted to talk about this during the Intergovernmental Committee hearing, but that hasn't occurred yet. So I'll mention it here, the PCR-2126, the proposal to change the constitution of the school committee. While there are some issues with the makeup of the school committee as it currently exists, the fact that two members are at large and those two members every 4 years have to run a citywide campaign akin to what a mayoral candidate has to do, I think is very difficult, and it prevents a number of people from wanting to do it. So, while there might be some changes that need to be made to the makeup of the school committee, I think the current proposal needs a little more thought and work. I think the nine members might be too many. I know instead of coming from each ward, they're coming from districts, so three from each district, which might make it easier to find people to run. But I think at this point, the proposal as it stands needs some more consideration to the fact that even getting three people from each district might be difficult to do. And I think five maybe might be too small considering the size of the city. Nine might be too large, and you might be looking for one of those Goldilocks situations, which is what is just right. On numerous occasions, I have also mentioned, since the city side takes obviously such an interest in the schools, and then every year around budget time has the same mantra, which is we just approve the budget, we have no say in it. During the past year, the schools endured the budget commission, which was established by the city. Maybe the schools need to become a city department like every other department in the city, and then the schools answer to the city, and then the city has to own it and can't just sit back and blame the school committee and the school department for everything. They would get a say in then how the money is spent, and then they can't sit back and say, oh, we just approve it, we can't say how it's spent. So the current proposal as written, I think, needs some more thought. And ultimately, if a change is to be made, why not just subsume the schools and be in charge, if that's what you guys want? Thank you.
All right, and we'll give it one last shot. And I know it was mentioned that he's not here, but we give him the opportunity. Rob Cody. And Richard Langseth. All right, so that concludes public comment.
Can I speak? Mr. Sinapi, can I go? I didn't have time to sign up.
We're not allowed to permit you to speak under that context. I apologize. We're going to move back to intergovernmental because we've had someone waiting here to speak.
Mr. President.
Pardon. All right, I've been given free rein. So just go ahead. You're subject to the same rules as far as what we normally do for speaking under this portion. Just make sure you introduce yourself, please.
I'll withdraw my request.
Thank you. Chris O'Connell. So I'm just going to assume tonight was a happy coincidence that you chose to wait until now to do the public comment. So I'm just going to stick with that. Maybe because you wanted to get your public hearing out of the way. I'll stick with that. As for what Rob wants to say, you're going to have to wait next month to hear what he has to say. So, but you're going to have to listen to me tonight. Mr. Mayor, it's good to see you. Ms. Necco, I don't know, sorry. Chris O'Connell, okay. Well, if any of you are paying attention to what I'm posting on Mr. Cushman's page, then maybe you would know me, but it's all right. Let me tell you something, there's some snakes in this room. One right in front of me, and one right next to me. How can you come up here in January and say that you're friends with this man while you're trying to ram one of these poles up him? So just I don't know how you can.
As a reminder, we're not allowed to have personal attacks, but please continue.
That wasn't a personal attack. I didn't attack his character. I said he was doing an action. Big difference. Because it was true. I don't understand it. I really don't. For there to be some sort of conceited effort to go after this man. That's why I do what I do. Someone I respect. And you stood up there and said, oh, we're friends, while you tried to remove him. That's where I'm coming from. It's the truth. I don't know why you guys wanted to go after him. I really don't. And you could have had your $50 million bond. But you wanted to put this guy in charge of it. No way in hell is that going to happen. Absolutely not. I would have voted for the bond if he was in charge. But then you tried to take him out. So there's no more trust. There's just no more trust. You can make amends. I think you can make amends. All you got to do is just realize where we're all coming from. And as for the schools, we have the highest per pupil rates in the country. They're well funded. If you make the hard decisions now, you won't have to worry about all this other nonsense. It's the truth. And as for all this other fire department stuff, I think it's funny. I really do. I understand they may be reserve. Some of those may have been reserve rescues. But if you're driving around with broken headlights, what else are we supposed to assume? And it's not easy for us to ask questions. We get any sort of Freedom of Information Act gets turned down most of the time. So what are we supposed to do? I really don't know. You got my number. Why don't you just call me? I can help. I don't like doing this. I really don't. But when you make moves against people I respect and that we trust, what am I supposed to do? Stand back? Seriously, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. He's in my ward, and he's someone I respect. And a lot of other people do too. So that's where I'm coming from. So I'd like to put all this nonsense behind us and move forward. The fighting has to stop, and we all have to work together. There's plenty of money in the city, plenty. You got a super strong tax base. All your problems can be solved if you just listen. It's that simple. So I'll just leave you with that. I really don't like to do the personal attacks and all this other nonsense. I can't imagine what it was like for you to drive by, if you did drive by when I was out there in that cow suit. I don't want to do that. But once again, that's where I'm coming from. So with that, I would like to see all you work together. And if you can do that, then you'll solve all your problems. Look at Cranston. It's a crap show.
35 seconds, sir.
So you can fix the schools if you listen to this man and you get the chairman to apologize, chairman of the school committee to apologize for that nonsense that happened. Nonsense. The school's been operating in a deficit for a long time. So there's plenty of money. Figure it out. Work together. And give me a call if you want. Because I got a lot of great ideas, especially with Rocky Point. I can do a lot of good things there. 100%. So thank you.
All right. We're going to go to intergovernmental, unless there's any objection, for the, as we pointed out, because there's someone here to speak on it. By the way, are either of the two claimants here who are here regarding appealing a claim? I think it's Mr. Contrarius or Contrarius. I'm going to butcher the name. And Ms. Croft, I believe. Contrarius and Croft. All right, just wanted to check. So intergovernmental, please.
Good evening. Time is now 7:58. Intergovernmental comes to order. First item of business, acceptance of minutes from March 9th. Do we have a motion?
Motion move favorable action.
Second.
Thank you. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes from April 6th. Do I have a motion?
Motion move favorable action.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Unless there's any objection, I'd like to move item number 5, PCR 4526, a resolution requesting the General Assembly to support recycling reform legislation S312 and H7911 up first. Any objection?
No objection.
No objection.
Okay.
Chairman, yep. I just wanted to note for the record I'll be recusing from participating in this conversation this evening.
Thank you for the heads
thank
up.
Thank you.
But then who shall guide us?
Okay. So
I think we have enough lawyers.
We have, yes.
No, right there.
Yeah, right there. So. That's perfect. So thank you. Okay, Senator, we can start with you. I know you want to speak on this item, so the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to everyone on the committee for entertaining this resolution. I was co-chair with Rep. McEntee of a joint House and Senate commission that looked at plastic waste reduction. and we actually expanded it to include glass and aluminum and other materials. And we came out with a number of recommendations. I would be happy to point any of you to the URL for that commission final report. I'm not suggesting you read the entire report. It's a little too thick. But I'd recommend that you take a look at our letter to the Speaker and the Senate President, which is brief. And we also have findings and recommendations. So we're talking about maybe 6 or 7 pages worth. But what it does is it sums up what we found in the course of 18 months of looking at this. And I will tell you that as a result of this study, we put forth the bill that is presently before the General Assembly and the one that your resolution proposes to support. And it is not your grandfather's bottle bill. There have been bottle bills put in over the years, left and right. We took a very good look at what best practices are around the country. And so we have actually proposed something which would, if we passed it, make us the first in the nation to actually institute both a quote-unquote bottle bill or deposit return system, DRS, whatever you want to call it, both the bottle bill and an EPR, extended producer responsibility aspect, all put together in one bill. And it would take a little bit of time. It would probably be at least a couple of years, maybe 3 years, before we could get a bottle bill up and running. It would probably take a little longer than that, 3, perhaps 4 years, before we could get extended producer responsibility going. It begs the question, though, first of all, why? And there's a few reasons. Certainly, I would say the number one reason is we pull our bin out to the curb each week, and most people think everything's being recycled. When they find out that it's as little as 26% that's actually being recycled, I have found people that I've spoken to are a little ticked off. And the 26 may be generous. It might be as low as 14. We certainly heard that in the course of the evidence that came into the commission. So to begin with, we're not doing a very good job of recycling. The second thing is, you may recall, there was a study that URI did, and that came out within the past year or so. Commission ended up almost exactly a year ago this time. The study had just come out at the time. What the study showed was that in the top 3 inches of base soil, they estimate that there are over 1,000 tons of microplastics. Well, in order to get to the soil, they need to go through the water. And we all know, because we've seen them on our roadways and in our waterways, and when there are beach cleanups, I think when they cleaned up the Saugatucket down in South County, they found 80,000 nips. And nips, unfortunately, with our present resource recovery and MRF, materials recycling facility, nips can't go through them. So they're supposed to go into the landfill, which isn't necessarily a good thing. We're filling the landfill. But more importantly, and too frequently, they end up being tossed out the window. And when they're tossed out the window again, they end up on our roadways and in our waterways, and eventually when they break down, they're in our bay. And my gosh, what is a greater resource that we have in Rhode Island than the Narragansett Bay? And when you think about it, they're in our shellfish, they're in our finfish. And when I take a swim in that bay, I'm probably ingesting some. So that's another reason why. I think you're going to hear from the mayor, and I know we've been hearing from multiple cities and towns, that the biggest reason why cities and towns are concerned about this is the cost. And the rejected loads that end up causing cities and towns to spend incredible amounts again, filling up the landfill instead of being recycled as they ought to be, that's clearly a reason why. So having recycling reform would mean that we would actually save big money for the cities and towns. And when I was at the recent League of Cities and Towns conference, I was stunned, actually, by how many cities and towns were coming out in support of our bills. So And Lee, just throw out a couple of others, but the primary one being tourism. You know, we invite people to come into our state, and the fact is, at times, it looks like somebody just dumped trash by the side of the road. And I have a problem with the DOT efforts to clean it up. That's another matter. But it would be nice if it never happened in the first place, and we wouldn't have to worry about cleaning it up. The reality is, when we looked at this, the study that we did taught us a couple of things most prominently. Almost everyone who came in from places like Oregon and Maine, and we had witnesses from both those places, the two best, the two premier recycling states in the country, said it boiled down to two things. If you're going to have a successful recycling program, you need to have incentive and you need to have convenience. If you don't have those two and in the appropriate measure, you're not going to have a successful program. And so, just to give you an idea on incentive, it has to be worth the effort to keep somebody from tossing that nip out the window. And so what we found is that the states that have 5-cent deposit, they really don't care. And people aren't too worried about getting their money back. Make it a dime, oddly enough, and suddenly people are worried. So when I buy my case of beer and it's $2.40, that hurts a little bit. And what that means is that people have an incentive to save. Folks have an incentive to walk as they used to do back in the day along the streets and pick up anything that they see, turn it in. So you need that. You also need the convenience. And what we have now is we're starting long after the first states. Oregon started in 1971. And so we do have the benefit of learning from places like Oregon and Maine. And they've gone through twists and turns along the way, and they've tweaked their systems to the point where they have exemplary recycling systems. And so with that in mind, we're in a position where, having learned from them, we can institute a system that incorporates all those tweaks and puts us in a position where we can have a best practices system to begin with. So for all those reasons, I am fully in support of your resolution. I guess probably the biggest thing, and some of the people don't fully realize, is most of the time when we're talking about a program in the state, we're talking about state money. And obviously we all pay taxes. The interesting part about this is that the DRS system, the bottle bill part of this deposit return system, would be paid for by the beverage industry. The second aspect of this, EPR, which is really packaging recycling, mostly plastics and cardboard, that type of thing. Think of what you get from Amazon. That would be paid for by the packaging industry. So one of the things that has made the speaker happy, because usually when you're talking about any program, he's going to say, well, we don't mint money down in the basement of the State House. We need to balance our budget every year. This is one of those things that's actually made him brighten up a little bit, because the fact is, the industry, in each case, is paying for this. And I will say, we had people come in to the commission from the Can Institute, from the glass industry, from the plastics industry, and they told us all the same thing, that they need this stuff back. Because to create, just as an example, a quote-unquote virgin plastic container costs far more than to create that using recycled material. And so for all of those reasons, along with the fact that if we're going to have the industry funding these things, they have an incentive to do the best they can. That means they're going to make improvements to the MRF, which will allow it to have nips actually be recycled, and many other things that presently aren't done by the recycling system that we have. And so I simply want to note that if you have an interest in further information, there is an organization out there called CHPR, CHPR. It's the Coalition for High Performance Recycling. And if you Google them, you will be able to get more than enough, more information than you want. But this is a very good resolution. I appreciate it. I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for all the information, and thank you for taking the time. Members of the committee, do you have any questions for the senator? Councilman Knapp.
Senator, thank you for taking the time. Just a question that might be rolling through some other folks' mind as well. The bottle deposit program. The folks that are purchasing at the stores pay the deposit up front, they keep their cans, they turn them in at location A, B, or C, and get that deposit back. The unreturned money, the bottles that don't go returned, don't get the money back, where do those funds
then exist? Unclaimed deposits.
Unclaimed deposits, yes.
Stay with the system. Doesn't just go to the state's general treasury. Absolutely, and that was one of the things that we looked at. Again, best practices. Gets plowed back into the system. The other thing that's interesting, and perhaps I didn't touch on it, is because we've learned from the best practices, we have things like there's an entity out of Maine called CLYNK, C-L-Y-N-K. And CLYNK is now not just operating in Maine, but they licensed their technology to Oregon and to parts of New York State and to other places, I believe Iowa as well. And what CLYNK has done is what's known as a green bag program. Right now, we've kind of got our trash and we've recyclables. There'd be a third green bag, and you could get those when you from CLYNK, when you go to the store or whatever. And they're actually all recyclable as well. But the interesting part of it is you get tags that have a QR on them. You slap on the QR, you throw your bottles and cans in over the course of a week, and you drop that at these places that are pristine. I mean, they'll be up in Maine, if you're familiar with Hannaford grocery stores, they're at every Hannaford. They've got a contract with Hannaford to do this. But they can be at any number of places, and we would have them in enough strategic locations around the state that they'd be, again, convenient. You drop those things in, and you don't have to do like you did in the old days, stand at a reverse vending machine and put in one bottle or can at a time. It takes ages, clogs up the lanes in the supermarket or whatever it might be. If you're a small retailer, we heard from all the small liquor stores, we don't want to deal with bottles and cans. We don't want to take them back. So we created a bill where we accommodated them, and we made it such they don't have to take them back. They can if they want, but it's an option. Of course, after they told us that, they still came out against it and said it would be a massive inconvenience. Oddly enough, somehow the people in Maine and Oregon are doing just fine, and it's not a massive inconvenience. It's hardly more than pulling those bins out to the curb every week. So essentially you can take that, drop it at one of these big boxes that'll be in the parking lot of the grocery store, and they run everything through. You don't have to worry about it. And within no time at all, it shows up on the app on your phone or on your card. For us Neanderthals, maybe we've got a card. But if you've got the app, it's there. The other thing that happens in the states that have CLYNK is they'll throw in like a 20%. If you use the funds from this, you get 20% off when you use those funds at the grocery store, at wherever you are. So a whole number of things that make it different from the bottle bills we sort of remember from the past.
Yeah.
I hope that answers the question, Councilman.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other members of the committee? Councilman Mito.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you very much, Senator McKinney. I do want to point out the 100, well, 1,000 metric ton was the original study by URI. They just released a new study by taking 10 cores of samples from Narragansett Bay, and they now estimate anywhere between 2,300 and 3,000 metric tons. And to give a sizing, that's equivalent to 300 garbage trucks dumped their contents, grinded, that's like compacted, in our bay. That's what they're estimating. Also, the conclusion is this is an exponential problem. So it's not just building a little bit each year, it is exponentially growing, and the timing of this is excellent. And the third part, which is a little bit more disturbing, is yes, it's in our waterway. It is now being found in our fish, in our seafood that we eat. and most recent studies by MIT is now it is in the human body changing the mitochondria of your cell structure. So we are literally harming ourselves by throwing garbage and having plastics in our food system. So
I've not seen that study yet, but thank you. And yes, there are any number of studies that show that having microplastics in the human body is not a particularly good thing.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman DeLuis.
Thank you for coming here, Senator. I want to know if we could talk further, not maybe the next week or so. I want to propose legislation. Okay, there's one thing that upsets me, okay? It's a ridiculous thing. I want to go after the Amazons. I want to go after these companies that, okay? I have packages show up in my house every day. Now, I don't order these packages, but someone else does. So what my gripe is this, okay? The planet, it's only has so many resources. I want to control, or I want to come up with legislation that fines like an Amazon, okay? So just one example, and you can see where I'm coming from. So a pair of earrings appeared on my doorstep one day, okay? It was in a shoebox size container. Okay, so I said, Robin, what did you get now? He said, oh, I ordered a pair of earrings. I said, what are you talking about? She opened the box, and it was like one of these puzzles. Like inside the box is another box, and then no. But
Councilman, try to keep it to the current.
Okay, I'm sorry, but can we speak about this afterwards?
Absolutely.
Because they're killing the planet by using oversized boxes, and it could have been put in like one of those bubble envelopes and shipped. That's it.
Thank you. Absolutely, I share your frustration when I see that. I will note this. We did approach the problem from the standpoint of rather than going against the Amazons of the world, how do we make sure that they've got an incentive to get all that back? And maybe then they'll think about putting it into smaller bits. As we go along, if we can persuade them to use smaller packaging, I'm all for it. But I think of it because when we did, years ago, I was involved with workers' compensation reform. And people said, you're never going to get workers' compensation reform through. And they had tried twice before in recent years before I got involved with it with some other good people. When they tried before, one of the things they did was they went after the lawyers. Everybody loves that, you know. If you can go after the lawyers, I eventually sort of explained that some point, if there's a nuclear holocaust, there are going to be a few life forms that still survive. Scorpions and snakes and probably lawyers. And so the reality being, learn to work with them. No, and what we did with that comp reform was we changed the parameters that the lawyers could operate within. And when we did that, workers' comp hasn't been a problem for 30 plus years. So I think in the same way, if we can work with the packaging industry, make sure that they want to get all of this stuff back, and they create the kind of methods that enable them to do that, it might be easier than going head-to-head with Amazon. But
thank you. Thank you, Councilman. Thank you, Senator. I'll go to Councilman Ricks. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. I think this may be the first time in the 10 years I've been on the City Council that a member of the General Assembly has come down to ask the City Council for support in favor of a resolution before the General Assembly. Thank you for coming. Thank you for explaining the legislation. With any legislation, any resolution that we're sending up to the General Assembly on in favor of or in opposition to anything that's pending before the General Assembly, I try to be consistent with the test of should this be the type of item that the Warwick City Council is weighing in on? And I would say that yes, Warwick is downstream. Warwick has the most shoreline of any city or town in the state of Rhode Island, with the technical exception of Portsmouth, but they don't count. Prudence Island, sorry, Portsmouth. Warwick has more shoreline. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, yeah, I would say that, yes, we are here in Warwick disproportionately affected by this because of our rivers and streams, because of our beautiful shoreline on Narragansett Bay. I read it through the legislation. It's very intense to get through it all, but yeah, I think it's very well crafted. I think that you make an excellent presentation in favor of it. So both as a matter of that procedural standard that I have to try to separate this from everything else, where I don't think that the Warwick City Council should try to be a mock General Assembly. But on something like this, because it disproportionately affects Warwick, and also simply on its own merits from reviewing this, and also from hearing from my colleagues on the committee, I am confident in this, and I would certainly urge my colleagues to send this back to the General Assembly with Senator McKinney from Warwick here advocating for this important change. Try to clean up the environment here in our great city. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman.
To clarify, he's from Southern Warwick.
Seeing no more lights, well, one light about to go off. Recognize Mayor Frank Picozzi. Your light is recognized.
Now, I've spoken with Senator McKinney on this subject many times, and other state leaders too. I'm in full support of it. He mentioned that in my role as municipal leader, I'm more concerned with the financial impact, but we are concerned with the environment also. And I have to tell you, it's been the topic of conversation in the League of Cities and Towns, and you'd be surprised. I haven't had one colleague yet that isn't on board with this. It's something that's needed. The landfill's in its end years, and we have to do what we can to stop burying things there because, again, the financial, it's going to get very, very expensive for us to get rid of trash. So this, I fully support and I urge you to pass this.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Senator.
Is that good enough, Mark?
Well done. Do we have a motion?
Thank you.
Apologies. Do we have any members of the public who wish to speak on this resolution to the General Assembly? Seeing none. Do we have a motion?
Motion for favorable action.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That'll move to the floor with a favorable recommendation. If there are no objections, I'll just move back to number one. So item number one for us is PCR 1926, a resolution of the General Assembly requesting amendment of the Warwick City Charter to require annual presentations at public hearings before the City Council regarding city financial status and audit results. This is primarily sponsored by Councilman Ricks. Councilman Ricks, is this ready to be heard, and what's your pleasure?
Thank you. Yes, if we could, I would recommend favorable action if your committee would entertain this evening.
Thank you, Councilman. I will open the floor. Any members of the committee have any comments, questions, etc. on PCR 1926? Councilman Napa.
Just as an observation, perhaps to get some insight from the sponsors here, I believe that this is something that we now require in our council rules. Is the intent of this particular resolution to make this something different, or is it to echo and just further codify what we currently require in our council rules? So if someone of Councilman Ricks or Councilman Lattice or Councilman Muto could just shed some light on that for my own edification, to educate me a little bit on where we're at.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you, Chairman. So yes, this is largely to codify what already exists in the Warwick City Council's rules. It has one addition of clarifying that that financial presentation is to include a five-year forecast of the city's reasonably anticipated revenues and expenditures. So the primary purpose of having this in the charter as well as in the council rules is because the council rules, they can be easily changed from one year to the next. They may be suspended by unanimous consent, or they may be amended within the course of a year. And I think that something like this, especially since it has been a regular feature of the City Council for as long as any of us presently on the City Council have been here, to have this type of financial presentation prior to the budget hearings, sometimes with, sometimes without the five-year forecast. I think that that's an important inclusion in this type of presentation. But I think that having it a more permanent fixture, it's something that's tried and tested. It's also something where having it in the charter also gives those assurances to the members of the public that, okay, this is fixed. This isn't going to be something that is that's necessarily optional. So additional public transparency on that point as well.
Thank you. Councilman, did that answer your question, Councilman Apple? Yeah. Other members of the committee? Councilman Lattice, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Initially agreed to co-sponsor this because under our new council rules, as you all know, it takes two co-sponsors to get these to the floor. And I concur with the comments of Councilman Ricks. I don't see any negatives to this. I think the additional oversight by the City Council on these appointments, I think it is good governance, and I think it also makes on some of these appointments good financial accountability. And for those reasons, I will be supporting this, and I would respectfully request that the Commission give favorable action on this also. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilman. Okay, I'm interested in hearing any opposition. Is there any opposition, or is there thoughts from the city on this?
Not really any opposition to the concept, because I think those reports are very important, but the charter change is a very drastic step. I don't see why it couldn't be done in ordinance. So the future councils, you're not tying their hands. They may want to alter it or tailor it a different way. Once it's in the charter, it's in there, and it's hard to change. So I have no objection to the concept. I think those reports are important, but I think it could be done by ordinance too, which is less drastic than changing the charter. And if a future council, Councilman Lattice says it all the time, we're not going to be here forever. They may want the flexibility to change it, add to it, tailor it in a different way, and whatever. But once it's in the charter, it's a long road to change it. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
So I support it and don't support it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And maybe a question to the solicitor. In terms of effectuating something similar in ordinance, is that as straightforward as finding the right place to put it and docketing an ordinance, and we could enshrine this? And
Yes, this is a resolution, so we wouldn't be able to convert it into that way, but if it were docketed this evening, we could follow up with an appropriate slot to codify this practice in ordinances.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you, and I certainly respect having an ordinance to the same effect as an alternative approach here. The reason that I think that having this in the charter would be superior is because this as a baseline, I really think that especially if we hear tonight, after so many years of basically having this exact practice, are not finding a reason not to continue with this practice. I think it is a good idea to have it baked into the charter. So, well, I suppose the corollary of make it very difficult for it to be changed. That's not to say that additional requirements or different changes from time to time, well, I'll put it the opposite way. It could be that some tweaks of, say, additional requirements or additional elements could be beneficial 1 year to the next, but that's something that really could be done on a year-by-year basis, basically adding some additional elements or flavors to it. Maybe in a given year, let's say a major bond goes out, maybe we want to try to, in addition to having a five-year forecast, have an additional further out forecast. Perhaps in the event that Warwick is undergoing a financial crisis, maybe we would want a more detailed report that really sinks in with, okay, we want the actuaries to come back with very specific guidance, or I'm spitballing here, you can see. But you can see how there are different elements that could be added onto this. However, for this particular item, I think that having the base into the charter would be beneficial, and it certainly gives us the flexibility to add elements 1 year to the next, completely at the City Council's option.
Thank you, Councilman. Okay, so I think before us stands sort of some options. One is sort of the more permanent and sort of binding addition of this as a annual routine for the City Council to get into, or the city to get into, because obviously this is a collaborative process. And then there's sort of the more fungible option of the ordinance, which of course is not entirely fungible. It takes a process to alter an ordinance after some time, including multiple hearings. But it may, from a public optics perspective, putting it on the ballot certainly carries some weight. I don't see anything here that is sort of out of bounds or that would go, would no longer be in vogue, to have a five-year forecast or to have a public meeting about the city's finances. It could in some ways be redundant to the budget, but I think focused on both the findings of the actuary and the auditor is not entirely out of bounds. But I would love to hear from the public. Ms. Comar.
Thank you, good evening. Michelle Comar, Ward 1. I'm in favor of the auditor coming annually for a public hearing and presenting a five-year plan with a Q&A session with the council people, the mayor, and the public. So I'll leave it up to the council whether they want to go into charter or an ordinance. My purpose tonight is just to bring up another amendment for your consideration. The other helpful financial consultant that comes before the council is the OPEC actuarial, Mr. Newton. And should you add him to the ordinance or the charter, not him per se, but that the OPEC actuarial do a presentation and, I don't know, a five-year forecast. I don't know if that type of financial consultant should come before or after the financial auditor, so I'll leave that up to the council to figure that out. But that's my suggestion for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Comar. I believe, if I'm reading this correctly, that both are envisioned in PCR 1926, and that the first paragraph reads that there'll be a public hearing on the city budget, shall convene a public hearing with an actuarial firm to present on the financial status. So that would be the what we just had. Yes, actuarial.
We have two consultants. The auditor, financial auditor, that does the financial status, healthiness of the city's finances. Then we have the OPEC actuarial. I didn't see those words in there.
Yeah, I think actuarial firm refers to the firm that does the actuarial work for pensions as well.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so I think both of those are covered in here. Any other members of the public have anything to add on this? Seeing none. Okay, so we have some decisions to make here, whether we want to go forward with this as is with a recommendation to the group, whether we think we want to just pass it to the group with no recommendation and consider the ordinance route. I'm open for a motion from any who'd like to offer one. Councilman Mito.
I'd like to make a motion to move to the floor with no recommendation and for discussion, please.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right, 6-3. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving along. PCR 20-26, a resolution of the General Assembly requesting amendment of the Warwick City Charter to provide for council advice and consent for Charter Article 8, mayoral appointments.